Right now, it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz. It's time for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us here on a Monday morning. We talk about food, recipes, and more. Good morning, Arthur.
And more. I like that part.
Yes, well, it expands out. It starts out.
It does. It does. I always think of that as a sort of negative, but perhaps it's not.
No, it's not, because it starts off, you encompass so much. I think that's why so many people...
My mind wanders. Well, it is.
Yeah, but you know what?
Well, it has wandered, you know, as a food editor. Gail Green passed away. I hope I mentioned that. Only happened maybe a month ago. And the reason I'm mentioning her is that she always used to say that she was the longest living food critic in America, and I was only the second longest living. So now I guess I'm the longest living. So I've been doing this for so long, it's like a knee-jerk reaction. It's after Thanksgiving, it's time to think about holiday parties. And the first thing that came to mind was dips and spreads. And in fact, Thanksgiving, I guess it starts with Thanksgiving. Did you have any dips or spreads at your Thanksgiving dinner?
When I was growing up, no, because there was so much food and everything like
that.
Well,
I know, but now, still,
now it's changed. Yeah, I think the only dips and spreads we used back then were, and this is going to sound crazy, onion dip.
No, I was going to mention it, because last year I decided, well, I really would like to have that onion dip, but do I really want to use Lipton, dry onion soup mix, which has a particular flavor, and I found a recipe from scratch. It wasn't worth doing, okay?
Yeah.
And it didn't have that particular flavor. So I think I'm all for Lipton onion soup and sour cream dip. And I think you have to have potato chips for that, don't you?
Yes. Yeah. You need something salty.
I mean, that's it. Yeah. But I guess I was thinking of the dip. I don't make it, even though I may crave it from time to time. But I do make a lot of, when I'm thinking about it, I already make a lot of dips and spreads that are part of my regular repertoire. And hummus, I guess, is chief among them, although I'm very down on hummus lately, only because I don't think people even understand that you can make it so easily from scratch, or semi-scratch if you consider it's canned chickpeas. I do like canned chickpeas. I've read so many complicated recipes for hummus that I can't, and they always make me groan. So here's my very simple one. A can of chickpeas, drained, but save the liquid in the can. Do not throw away the liquid. You undoubtedly will use some of it, if not all of it. I use my mini processor for this, and I chop up one or two cloves of garlic, depending on the size of the clove and my mood that day. I start out with the garlic so that it gets nicely chopped before I add everything else, which is the chickpeas, two heaping tablespoons of tahini, sesame seed paste. When I say heaping, you know, it's liquidy tahini. So one, you know, big sloppy spoon of tahini, and then another. And the juice of a lemon, I would say half teaspoon of salt to start, and whirl that all up in your mini processor. It's not a lot for a big processor, so I use the mini. And I don't have to get out the big machine either. So you whirl that, and adding back the liquid from the chickpea can, you may not have to use it all to get it to the consistency you want, but the eventual hummus should be silky smooth. So it takes a little bit of processing and probably more liquid than at first you think it may need. That's hummus. But, you know, everybody's buying hummus at the supermarket now. Someplace I go shopping, they actually have like a hummus section with so many different flavors and products. It's dizzying. But anyway, I prefer baba ganoush anyway. So baba ganoush is pretty much the same thing as hummus, but not. Because it's eggplant, not chickpeas. But again, you start it off, I roast the eggplant until it collapses. at 400 degrees, that could take a long time, depending on the size of the eggplant, or plants, plural. And then I don't even wait for it to cool. I slit it open, holding it by the stem end, I slit it open. And by the way, you should puncture the eggplant a little bit before you put it in the oven, otherwise it might explode. Give the steam some place to go out. So holding it by the stem end, I slit it. And very often there's a lot of liquid, sometimes it's not. And then I let it cool sort of on the side of the bowl where it also drains a little bit. And when it's cooled down somewhat, scrape off the flesh from the skin, throw away the skin. And I like to hand mash my baba ganoush. I don't want it to be creamy smooth. So I use a fork. I have a wooden fork that I like to use for this because it's big and not a little fork. Then it would take too long. Or you can just chop it up on your chopping board and mash a little bit of it and leave it some a little lumpy, but I like it sort of just coarse in general. And to that, add lemon juice again. Start out with a half a lemon. You may want to add more later, probably will. And then again, for each, let's say, 1.5 to 2 pound eggplant, you want at least 2 sloppy spoonfuls of tahini. Maybe a third. You decide. And then salt, of course. I keep Aleppo pepper, which is a pepper that is a little bit spicy, but also a little bit sweet. It's not literally hot pepper. But whatever kind of pepper seasoning you want, could be black pepper, could be red pepper, a little bit. And that's it. That's baba, and mix it all up together very well. And then you taste it and decide if you want to add a little bit more tahini or whatever. But I've got to say, this is a Connecticut-related recipe, because the first time I ever ate it, much less made it, was at the home of Paula Wolfert, who at the time, she is a very famous food writer, but at the time she was living in Newtown, and it was on my way home from West Cornwall, and she would call me and say, I just tested these recipes, why don't you come by and eat with me, eat them with me. and that was the first time I had muhammara. I think Paula Wolfert probably introduced muhammara to America. It's a Syrian, I wouldn't say it was Syrian, because I know non-Syrians from the Middle East who also make muhammara, but at the time Paula was saying it was Syrian. And it's a roasted red pepper and walnut dip. Very common ingredients except for one, which is pomegranate molasses. Now, I can buy pomegranate molasses easy here in Brooklyn, but I'm not sure that it's a well-distributed product. You can, of course, buy it online. You can't leave it out. It's not the same as molasses. It's distinctly sweet and sour, and with a very distinct flavor. So a very concentrated pomegranate flavor. So you definitely need it for this recipe. But the pomegranate molasses has sat on my shelf here for over a year, well over a year, and it was still fine. It lasts, and you can buy it in very small bottles, too. So if you ever see it somewhere, buy it, because then you'll find uses for it. In fact, I don't know if it's still a trendy ingredient, but there was a period recently where I was seeing a lot of recipes included that weren't Middle Eastern even, including pomegranate molasses. It's a good product. Anyway, you need roasted peppers, 4 large red peppers roasted. I have been buying, for the last couple of years, really good red peppers, even in the winter, from Mexico. So look for them. They're all over. 4 large red peppers. Now, to roast them, I do them in a 450-degree oven right on the rack. 20 minutes at least 20 minutes at 450. You may want to flip them over at some point. And you might also want to put a baking sheet on the rack below it in case they drip. And then it's at least dripping on a sheet, not on your inside your oven. Not that that's a disaster, but anyway. So you want them to be blistered and charred when they're ready. So it could take a half an hour, I'm finding lately. Anyway, let them cool down, and then I do this all with my fingers. Peel them, core them, take the seeds out. And there is that little fleshy rib inside. I'd like to scrape that out, too. And now you have, and it's a fillet, sort of a red pepper. You now have a roasted red pepper, which you can do a lot of different things with. But in this case, put them in the bowl of a food processor. Let me start again with the garlic, okay? So in the food processor, in this case, you might want to use your full-size processor. You want to pulse together the walnuts. This is red peppers. I'm going to just briefly, red peppers, walnuts, pomegranate molasses, and some seasonings. And then in the end, you thicken it with breadcrumb. So you now have roasted peppers and your food processor put in your 1 cup of shelled walnuts and 2 very large cloves of garlic and pulse them until it's fine. And then add the red peppers and add some olive oil, just a few tablespoons, 2 or 3 tablespoons of olive oil, and process the whole thing again until it's chopped, and then adding in finally the seasonings of 3 tablespoons of pomegranate molasses, and I have to say to your taste, but start out with 1/4 teaspoon of hot pepper. As I told you, I always keep Aleppo pepper here, too. With that, you can use more. And if you like something very spicy, you can use a lot more than 1/4 teaspoon of cayenne pepper. At least 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of ground cumin, and process that into now your peppers, walnuts, garlic. It's getting good, folks. And finally, 1/2 cup of dried breadcrumbs. I make my own breadcrumbs. I don't care if they're fine or whatever, whatever. Not seasoned breadcrumbs, just plain old breadcrumbs. And don't, so here now these days, I have to say, don't use those Japanese panko crumbs. It's a different flavor. I was explaining that, I have been explaining this over and over again. Panko crumbs, I've been playing with panko crumbs. I'm really curious. So, well, it's also my job to know about these things. So panko is made from bread that is sweetened, like American white bread. Look on your labels. I'm going to do a whole show on reading labels. There's a lot revealed in labels that people don't read. So panko has sugar in it, which gives the crumbs its super crispiness, because sugar caramelizes in the oven or in the frying pan. It, by the way, browns quicker than regular bread crumbs. I've discovered that, and which is a good thing in some cases, you know, when we're putting something briefly in the oven. But remember, you are going to get a sweet edge with those breadcrumbs. Anyway, so 1/2 cup of unseasoned breadcrumbs, and that's it. Now, you want to put this in the refrigerator for a few hours, and the flavors will not only blend, but also come up, let's say. And you may want to reseason it a little bit more. Lemon juice, I don't think you'll want to add, there is no lemon juice in here, but you might want to add a little lemon juice, or salt. Here's a little cooking in general hint. I find it is best to salt food before you add spicy ingredients. The fact is, if you're on a low-salt diet, spicy food can cover up the lack of salt in a dish. Lemon juice and pepper, hot pepper, black pepper, white, any pepper, will mask the lack of salt. So in this case, I usually salt my mixture after I add in the pomegranate molasses and then add the spices at the end and the breadcrumbs, which, of course, breadcrumbs will soften the blow, let's say, of something that's too spicy. And you need them here mainly because you need a thickener. Even roasted peppers will give off a lot of moisture if they stand. So that's it. And this will keep in your fridge for a week. It's a great holiday thing, and it's red. So given the color, the taste, and the fact that you can make it at least a week ahead, or keep it around, is great, I think. The other one that I do this with, the other dip or spread, I think this is more of a spread than a dip, but I've dipped into it, is tapenade. Now, the word tapenade refers to capers. Interestingly, this has evolved, however, into more than just capers, and in fact, most people think of it as an olive dip or spread. So it's from southeast France, from Provence. And if somebody has given you, I would never buy this, but I have been given it. That's why I'm saying it this way. Herbe de Provence, which is a mixture of herbs that's used in the south of France, in Provence. And I don't have it, so I use thyme, which sort of everybody has, dried thyme. So here's this is, by the way, adapted, so to speak, from the instruction booklet that came with my mini processor. So obviously it's made for the mini food processor. And again, you're going to start by chopping two large cloves of garlic. You pulse the garlic, pulse, until it's finely chopped. And then, this has anchovies, but you wouldn't, if somebody says, I hate anchovies, don't tell them. They won't know. But it does add a lot to the dish. You want two anchovy fillets right out of the jar or the can, drained. You don't have to be meticulous about that. Just don't put a lot of the anchovy oil in. And then your olives. 1.5 cups of pitted Kalamata olives, Gaeta olives, if you want to be authentic, Niçoise olives. They're so tiny you have to peel, it's really hard to do. I have bought already pitted both Gaeta and Kalamata, and I don't know. For this, maybe it's okay, but I find the pre-pitted olives are not as firm and fresh feeling. Not that an olive is a fresh thing. The preserve thing, but it just has better quality, I think, when they have the pits in it. And it's not a big deal to pit Gaeta olives. You just pinch them between your thumb and your forefinger, and usually the pit will pop out. Kalamata, they're big enough usually that it's in the, and they're sort of freestone, so they're not so hard to pit either. But anyway, you need 1.5 cups of pitted purple olives, let's put it that way. And now come the capers. I use salted capers, which I rinse and soak a little bit. But if you only have or can only get the capers that come in a jar in brine or vinegar, it's 1/4 cup, again, rinsed well. In the case of the jarred ones, you just have to rinse them. You don't have to soak them. 2 tablespoons. This is all going into the processor. 2 tablespoons of Dijon mustard, again, lemon juice, the juice of a small lemon, which is about 2 tablespoons. 1 tablespoon, I know it's a frightening amount, of dried thyme. It does not take over. And that's, by the way, another reason why this tapenade has to sit for a while is because it takes time for the dried thyme to reconstitute in here and give off its flavor to the whole. 3/4 teaspoon of black pepper, and whirl that all together, at least, you know, pulsing it, scraping it down, and then add a quarter cup of extra virgin olive oil, and process it again until it's pretty smooth. And that's it. Scrape it into a serving dish. Let it sit for at least a few hours. I mean, you can make that in the morning for the evening, but also it's better even the next day, and it'll stay in the fridge for a week, too. It's very concentrated. You're going to end up with about a cup and a half, and that's going to be quite a lot. I mean, I guess you could double it if you want. You'll then have to use a regular food processor. But believe it or not, a tapenade is one, I think, terrific just on any cracker. You don't need any special bread for it. As far as the mojamra goes, I like to put that on pita chips or pita whatever. It could just be pita, for that matter. And that can either be spread or dipped. We talked about Lipton onion soup. It made me think I really want this. By the way, for Thanksgiving, my nephew bought a tray of a shrimp cocktail from a nearby caterer. There was sensational shrimp that was one part of the appeal. But it made me remember many years ago when I spent some time in the Hamptons. I don't know what they serve at parties in the Hamptons. I haven't been to the Hamptons in 30 years. But I have to ask Joan Hamburg, my former radio wife, because she still has a house in the Hamptons. But every single party you went to, there was shrimp cocktail. Every single party. Some of it horrible, some of it unbelievably good, some of it with creative things to dip it into, some with only cocktail sauce. And I've never stopped loving shrimp cocktail. And you go to a restaurant these days, a shrimp cocktail is the price of an entree. I don't know. Well, the price of an entree for me. So entrees are the price of a mortgage payment. That's the way it is.
I love shrimp cocktail. And my first wedding, I never got any shrimp cocktail. So when I got married a second time, I said to the caterer, "I want you to hide a big bowl of shrimp cocktail and bring it to the table." It's the first time I got married, I never got any shrimp.
Well, anyway, I asked my nephew if this place that he bought it from sells the shrimp themselves. There was such good shrimp. I have to find out. I can't find out what they were, though. You know, he said, no, they only have cooked food, they're caterers. But I would buy it from them. By the way, I buy the shrimp cocktail at Costco. I doctor the cocktail sauce by adding more horseradish and more and a few shots of Tabasco.
Yeah,
but the shrimp themselves are really, really good, and better than any place I can buy them in my neighborhood anyway. So dips and spreads.
You know what's great about shrimp cocktail is it's got to be served so the shrimp are like icy cold.
Well, these were, not only, but these were enormous,
yeah,
and really, really perfectly cooked. I mean, 1 minute less, they would have been raw. They really knew what they were doing. So, yeah, shrimp cocktail is always a winner. And shrimp are not so expensive anymore. They, you know, when I was a kid, shrimp was an expensive, well, they're expensive in restaurants, but shrimp is an expensive thing. I don't think shrimp are considered expensive anymore. Here's one. This is, Marshall, you're old enough to remember fondue.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So I happen to love fondue. And believe it or not, it's not so easy to make because it can come out grainy. I don't want to go with all the things that could go wrong with fondue. The trick to fondue, I'm not even going to give you a recipe, is to have a very acidic wine. Or I guess you could add a little bit of drops full of lemon juice to give the acidity. The other dip/spread that I do like, and when it came into my memory this morning, I said, you know what, I'm going to make some. It's chili con queso. Now, I did not learn about chili con queso from any Southwestern American, from... Anyway, I learned about it from James Beard, who has a recipe for it in my first... I'm looking at it right now. This is 1965. So I bought this book when it came out in 1965 called Menus for Entertaining. In 1965, I was the social director of my fraternity at the University of Maryland and was in charge of making dinners and blah, blah, blah. So this was my book. Chili con queso was one of my specialties. In the James Beard version, you make a tomato sauce with a can of 28-ounce can of good plum tomatoes. You cook them down with some garlic. And he, you know, this is 1965. What did we know from chili peppers? Unless you lived in the Southwest, you knew nothing about chili peppers. And so, but these days, I might add to my tomato sauce, either chopped chili peppers or a can of maybe chipotle peppers,
yep,
chopped up, something, I don't know, a little special, at least a little interesting. You know, chipotle peppers have a smoky edge, so I like that. And then you combine this cooked down tomato sauce with a made from 28-ounce can of tomatoes with a cup and a half of what Beard calls velouté, which only means white sauce made with broth instead of milk. I think his is richer than that. But believe me, if you make a white sauce with either... you could use vegetable broth. You want to make the, you could make this whole thing vegan if you have a vegan person coming. and you add... so you make it with vegetable broth, 1.5 cups. I would say medium thickness. So that would mean like two tablespoons of flour, 2 tablespoons of butter, or if you're making it vegan oil, to 1.5 cups of broth, and bring it to a simmer until it thickens. Season it with salt, pepper. I would use some nutmeg, like I always do in a white sauce, and then combine it with your tomato sauce. Stir them together, and then you get the queso. You add cheese, and I always use cheddar because that's what you get in 1965. But nowadays you could add something more exotic. But a good melting cheese. And you're going to need at least a couple of cups. And this is a good dip to swipe with chips, with corn chips. You can also make nachos with it. Pour it over a whole platterful of chips and then garnish it with, let's say, pickled jalapenos or whatever you want. Holiday dips and spreads.
All right.
We all should have a few in the repertoire.
You know, I always hate when you buy hummus in the store and they call it red pepper hummus and people just put it out and you got the little swirl of red pepper in the middle. Folks, when you're going to have a party and you got red pepper hummus, mix it up so the peppers, because there's always one jerk that comes and takes all the red peppers.
Takes all the red pepper. Okay, well, let me say proudly that I have never bought supermarket, any brand, any flavor of hummus. And it's so ubiquitous now. I'm happy about that. But when I wrote about hummus in 1978, I guess I was ahead of my time.
Well, you've always been ahead of your time.
Yeah, that's not a good thing, folks. Somebody else gets the credit further down the line.
All right, well, we'll speak to you next week.
I hope so.
All right, definitely.
Okay, take care.
Take care, Arthur. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, this morning here on The Breakfast Club on Robin Hood Radio.
Underlying support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, Hillsdale Home Chef. More information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.